Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Nicole calling from Hamilton, and I needed to let everyone know that I really proudly support Vish and Creative Control. I have for many years, I will for many more, as long as he keeps delivering these amazing interview podcasts. When you hear one of Vish's interviews, you think he's known this guest for years, they're good friends, but the truth is he approaches every interview, whether it's sort of up-and-coming indie artists or established icons or like famous intimidating comedians with a really deep, genuine curiosity, so he's never met this person, and the same really warm candor, as so he's known them forever. I think it really lends to a great chat, no matter who he's talking to, and for that reason, I think you should throw Vish, like what, $1 a month? He's got jokes. The jokes make it worth it. Support Creative Control on Patreon.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and remember, when you name a dog Janet or Timothy, you are dragging humanity down just a little bit.
Andre Etche and Sandro Perry are both uniquely talented musicians who call Ontario, Canada home. Initially known for his role in The Deadly Snakes, Etche is an accomplished visual artist, multi-instrumentalist, and songwriter who has released wondrous solo albums on labels like Paperbag, Blue Fog, and Telephone Explosion. Perry is an engineer, producer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist who once operated under the name Polmo Polpo and continues to make music in the collaborative project Offworld, but is likely best known for the solo albums he has released under his own name with Constellation Records. Via Telephone Explosion, Etche has released a trilogy of collaborative records with Perry in recent years, including Further Up Island, which came out in July 2021. Shortly after its release, Andre and Sandro returned to this show for a spirited conversation about how much cows love hearing the melodica. Borrowing or renting Robert Altman films and Tom Waits CDs from the local library or your local CD rental outlet, the movie Return of the Jedi and the recording engineer Mark Howard, who captured key albums by the Tragically Hip and Bob Dylan, how Andre and Sandro first met and began making music for the CBC, music interview gimmickry, Will Oldham, and why we talk about music. Working in threes and the highs and lows of having a web presence, the album Further Up Island, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol with additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and friendly staff who will happily help you secure special orders for hard-to-find titles, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is the 641st episode of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Andre Etche and Sandro Perry, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hello, Andre, Sandro, are you there?
Yep. Hi, Vish.
Hi, Vish.
Hi, Andre. Hi, Sandro. Nice to hear your voices. That was a very chaotic hello. Sandro, just settle down, Sandro. I'll get to you in a moment. It's nice to hear from you. Andre, where in the world are you today?
Today, I'm in sunny Toronto, Canada, Ontario. Oh.
Lovely. It sounds lovely just by that description. Sunny. That's nice. You like the sun. That's good.
It's sunny today and it's a nice temperature. It's kind of cool today. It's like 18 and sunny.
Oh, it's like a spring day as opposed to a summer, July summer. Is Toronto doing okay from your perspective? Are you going out into the world and stuff?
Toronto feels like it's doing okay. I know that we still have to be diligent, but it's feeling good. I hope that we don't slide back into trouble, but people seem happy. They're out in the world.
That's good. That's about the best you can hope for these days, I would say.
For sure. Yeah.
So
that's good.
Well, it's nice to have you back on the show, and also back on the show, your partner in crime, so to speak. Sandro, how are you?
Hey, Vish. I'm doing really good today.
good. Where in the world are you?
I am in. I'm actually just outside of a little town called Demarestville, and it's also in Ontario, Canada.
Oh,
about 2.5 hours away from Toronto, where Andre is.
What brings you to Demarestville? By the way, I'm from Ontario, as you both know. I lived there almost my entire life. I don't believe I've ever heard tell of Demarestville. Where is that?
It's tiny.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
It's tiny. It's about, where is it? What's it close to? The closest major city is Kingston, I guess.
Oh.
Is it not considered the county?
It is. It is. It's part of the county.
Prince Edward County.
The county of the Prince Edward. Yeah, it is. It's so. So it's one of.
Why did you Yoda that? I don't understand why you did that.
What's that? The county then, Prince Edward County? I don't know. In Toronto, people refer to that area as the county.
Yes, that's right. Prince Edward County. Yeah. For those listeners from around the world, Prince Edward County is a region near Kingston, Ontario, and it has become kind of a buzzy place. It's like the Park Slope of Ontario or something, you know?
Of rural Ontario.
Yeah, everyone's like, are you going up to Prince? I'm going to Prince Edward County is like a common refrain now for a music festival
in Toronto
in particular. Yeah. So it's become this, I'm getting away from everything by going to Prince Edward County. But what brings you to Prince Edward County, Sandro?
We're getting away from everything.
Are you living there these days?
I actually moved out here eight months ago, I think.
Oh.
Somewhere between 8 to 9 months ago. Yeah, it's a long story. It's for another podcast episode, I think.
No. This is what do you mean on my show?
This is the one.
these aren't a dime a dozen. You can't just come in here to tell me where we don't have relocation episodes, by the way. We talk. Why you were? I gather. I know the last time you were on the show or the last time we conversed. I think you were like, what the hell? Like your studio space in Toronto was kind of taken away from you. Comes up on the show many times that the real estate market in Ontario, in Southern Ontario in particular, is volatile is the wrong word. It's just prohibitive.
It's bananas.
Yes.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So does that contribute to your decision to leave the GTA, the Greater Toronto area?
Yeah. I would say it's a pretty complicated decision. But yeah, that's definitely part of it. I mean, needless to say, it's a beautiful place, and we got really lucky. So we had to move basically. So we landed out here, and it is lovely. You should both visit sometime.
I'm going to. You should say what is outside of your. Isn't your studio surrounded by cows?
There's some cows.
Or are there cows in a neighboring field? You're not surrounded.
Yeah, you know? I wish there were more so as to make it a surrounding, but yeah, there's some cows in the field beside us, so they visit us once in a while.
I see.
And they really they love music. They love the melodica, actually, which is amazing. They're good listeners, cows.
There's been a few viral videos in the last few years of cows appreciating music.
Yeah, really.
I didn't know that.
There's been like videos of like people playing flute and I think violin, maybe like just sort of, you know, older instrumentation. It's not like Metallica is playing and then a bunch of cows show up. It's like children or people just like playing music by like a barbed wire fence, and all the cows kind of turn their head to be like, hey, what? I know that song. And then they all kind of herd over to be closer to the music. So I think what Sandra is describing is, I'm sure it was at least a little bit facetious, but I think it's true. I think they do like the music. Is that the music? I believe they call it music, right? Is that right?
They call it
music.
call it music, yeah.
among themselves, yeah, among the cow community, it is known as music. Yeah. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just, this is the third round. Thank you very much.
It's a good one.
I'm here all night.
It's because they say moo a lot.
It's because
we're going to explain every joke. Is that what we're doing today? I also like that Andre was like, you're surrounded by cows, although as though someone like the authorities needed to be called, and yet you took us in a no, it's fine. They're just hanging out. They like the music. No, that's
But when I from like a city person's perspective, like just one cow would be surrounded by cows.
That's true. They're quite large.
Absolutely. Do you know what we have here in my neighborhood frequently? Coyotes wandering down the street, and that's new for me here in Edmonton. I didn't know that's what I was. And some people are like, yeah, it's not a big deal, and other people are like, it's a really big deal. So I don't know.
Right now, it is a big deal. Yeah.
It's because
they're getting hungry.
You're overrun by road runners, and they have to release coyotes into the... Now you got a coyote problem.
Tried to explain that to Chad Van Galen from Calgary when he was on the show this year. He was like, oh, these majestic creatures, the coyote, oh, you see them in the ravine, and it's beautiful. I'm like, they don't seem that bright to me. Have you seen those documentary films where they're like, they get all that stuff from the Acme Company, and it never works out for them, and That's exactly.
Yeah, they're murderous.
They're failures. They're failures as a species. That's where I was coming from. They never actually get the thing they're chasing. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah, it's amazing that any of them survive because they can't catch their quarry.
And have you guys ever tried to lift an anvil? How heavy those things are?
They seem heavy based on the documented footage I've seen. And all the explosives.
They look heavier, but I've never lifted one myself, so
yes,
I can't speak.
Yes, I should
to
have
that.
Answered your question. I have not lifted an anvil myself. That's true.
Okay, well, you guys got to try it sometime. I mean, the fact that the coyotes can lift that is impressive.
Yeah. You know what music you should blast out of the speakers for the cows? Something by Anvil. That might be good. You remember that band Anvil?
I do.
I wonder if they'd like that.
I do.
That's a great movie.
Amazing movie.
Oh, yeah, the film. That's right. That's right. There you go. Anyway, this is...
It's good.
So you're not on a farm, though, Sandro. Normally, if there's cows in your neighborhood... You live on an acreage, a farm of some sort. So you're not
a farm, but close by there are some farms, and the cows just kind of hang out in the field beside us.
Okay,
they graze. Yeah, they graze, and then they come over once in a while and say hello in their way, which is nonverbal. and they listen. Like I was saying before, they're really good listeners. They're good. They're so good that they can tell when I'm not focusing on the music, when I'm kind of losing my concentration, and they get bored. They turn away. They're good. They keep me in line in a sense.
Sandro, are you writing a lot of music on melodica these days? Is that your chosen instrument right now?
Melodica. No, it's purely for the cows, actually. I'm not very good at it. I can only play, stuff in C major.
Right.
Or F sharp, all the black keys.
We have a melodica. Yes, we have a melodica in the house now. The children got one. And
it's amazing.
They're cool instruments.
Yeah, my daughter's taken to it.
It's all,
my
it's all over
it.
Andre's record.
Oh, that's right. It's all over this record, too. Yeah. So, Andre, I gather, Sandra, I gather from what you were saying earlier in this discussion, like, Andre, you've heard tell of the cows and the melodica, but you haven't yet been out there. Is that right?
No, well, we haven't been traveling that much. We haven't been leaving the city yet.
I just want to propose something to both of you, and it's not marriage. Just relax. Here's what I want to propose. What if Andre, when things feel safe enough to do so, Andre, what if you went out there and you got like a little film crew together and the two of you, because you collaborate, what if you just set up by like a barbed wire fence and started playing like your album in sequence live? And then gradually, just picture. I want us all to picture this. I'm framing it in my mind. It's like a one. It's a one shot. Mm-hmm. It's just a one shot of you two in frame with cows off in the distance, and you start to play your record together, right? And then all of a sudden, the cows come into like closer and closer. They come into the frame, and they come to enjoy the music.
Don't say any more because you'll give away the ending.
Because
we will.
This
do
feels
that.
Like a viral video. Like you would be the hugest video in the cow community and beyond. I think. Yeah. I think you should. Sandro, Andre is in. What do you make of my idea?
I would do it.
I'm in. I'm down. Okay. Sounds good.
Well,
I'd like to do that.
I would love it if we could start with a very, very long one shot of us walking out of the house and into the yard, setting up the instruments. All one shot, though, no editing. Like
Scorsese.
Like Scorsese. Or the beginning of, what's the Altman film with Tim Robbins in it?
The Player. Oh, yeah, The Player.
Oh, my God. That first shot is amazing.
I know the movie, but I don't.
Yeah, I can't think of it. I would rent movies like that from the Cambridge Public Library frequently. I would borrow all of my earliest movie experiences beyond, going. I think the first movie I ever saw in the theater with my dad took me, I think, was Return of the Jedi. I almost said the name wrong. That's what it's called, right? Return of the Jedi? Is that what it's called? It's not Return to the Jedi. I don't know why I thought it for a second.
Or Return with the Jedi.
Return
all your Jedis, please, I believe is the name of that movie.
Return of the Jedi. That's it.
So I saw that, but then the first movie we ever rented, my dad bought a VCR. The first movie we ever rented was Raiders of the Lost Ark. So he was a big Harrison Ford guy, I think, in retrospect. Mm-hmm. And anyway...
Yeah, Spielberg-Lucas
guy. Yeah, Spielberg-Lucas guy. So anyway, but frequently, throughout my childhood and teenage years, like, I would rent every Alfred Hitchcock movie from the... Rent. I keep saying rent. I would borrow movies from the library. So all Hitchcock and, you know, film noir and Woody Allen. I know he's not, you're not supposed to say his name even these days or whatever, but I...
Yeah, but you can't retroactively not have borrowed...
No, I borrowed them all. It says something about me as a child. I thought those movies were funny. I every one of them. I saw every one that they had. And anyway, Sandra, did you ever go to the library? Was the library important to you?
I did. It was a big deal for taking out CDs.
Yes.
Borrowing CDs. And
I rented a CD once that was not from a library.
You rented
I can tell you about
that
later.
Blockbuster Video?
Video in Toronto? Yes, yeah, you do.
On Queen there?
Yeah. World famous. Yeah, well, it used to be in Mervish Village, which is where Honest Ed's was. There was back when I was, you know, like 13, 12 and 13, it was there and it stayed there for a long time. But I remember they rented CDs and I rented a Tom Waits CD when I was little.
Nice.
How little are we talking?
Nice. Which one?
What was it?
So I must have been like 14 maybe because I rented Bone Machine.
That's weird. The first time I ever heard Bone Machine, I took it out of the Cambridge Public Library. I didn't take it. I borrowed it. And that's the first time I ever heard that as well. Also, the first time I heard American Recordings by Johnny Cash, the first one. So weird. Isn't that weird? The library. Sorry, maybe it's not weird.
Bone Machine. It just seems like a weird rental.
Crazy.
Or borrowed.
Why did I had to buy mine.
You had to go to the library.
Well, I eventually did buy it.
I think I heard about Bone Machine because of the video that was circulating on Much Music for... what's that song called?
I Don't Want to Grow Up.
No, it wasn't that.
He made a video for I Don't Want to... No?
No, it was the other one. It was the single, Going Out West. Going Out West.
Which
there's still a YouTube video of... Yeah, and there's...
And that's what you did.
It was seminal work, as the critics say. That's right. It got me out of the province.
That's cool.
That's
cool.
I was just going to say, okay. If you find it, if you want... You can see Tom Waits on the Arsenio Hall show playing that song.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I like that. That's kind of the only Tom Waits record that I now think about listening to.
It's a big cry.
I would listen to that record again.
It's good.
Because it sounds insane. It's an insane record.
Yes.
Like, it sounds Les like Claypool. It's recorded in literally a garage. Like, that the walls were made out of, at least one wall was made out of metal.
Yeah.
The sound of it.
Well, that's kind of what he was going for, right? Like junk shop owner turned musician thing. And, you know, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Sandra, do you know that? You said you had to, did you buy that record? What was your
experience? I bought the cassette, I believe. And I think I bought it because Les Claypool was on it.
That's correct.
That's right.
Yeah, he is. He plays bass on a few songs. And Keith Richards is also on that record.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah. That's a great song. I think it's a great song. It's been a long time. I remember at the time, like when you're 14 years old, you think that that is like, oh, that's the most soulful song ever recorded. But I wonder now if you just said
that. I hear there is a little bit of, as we get older, I hear it in your voice, Andre, and someone like Tom Waits really personifies this. The thing we liked, we now mistrust a little. I think... there's a little bit more knowledge about cultural appropriation or copying, you know.
Right.
Because I don't know about you guys. I had vaguely heard of Captain Beefheart, for example, but didn't really delve into, you know, those records. So I heard...
He seems to be doing everything that seemed so interesting about Tom Waits has a lot to do with... Captain Beefheart and Captain Beefheart's who's he doing an impression of, like Howlin' Wolf,
yes.
I guess, and then
mm-hmm.
So, but that's not to say I'm not actually. I should stop right there. I like Tom Waits. I think Tom Waits is a really good and talented songwriter, and those are emotional songs. Like on Bone Machine, there's that one like A Little Rain. I think it's called.
Man.
It's
all those
beautiful.
Songs are in my.
He's a good songwriter.
I would say they're a part of me, and there's songs on Mule Variations as well that are deeply a part of me. So, and that song with Keith Richards, that feel, I believe, is what it's called.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I'm sure
it's gorgeous. And so now, after this, I'm going to play Bone Machine later because I think that's great. Does that Sandra Andre was talking about the sound of the thing. And you bought it on cassette. You are you're an engineer. You're a producer. Did that have an impact on you? Did that shift you in any way in terms of not that particular record, maybe, but that era, like of just getting tapes, getting records? Do you think that's informed what you do now?
Oh yeah, big time. You know, I think I probably had a couple of Tom Waits records, and you know, in some way, everything you hear informs your thinking about things and your decisions and your ideas about what's good and what's not good, or what you like and what you don't like. That one in particular, yeah, you know, because it was creative. It was a sort of a creative use of the studio, I think. And it made you wonder, like Andre said, is one wall made of metal? Or is this record, like sometimes it sounds like it's recorded in a tin can or in a swimming pool, or, you know, and all of these things. Yeah, definitely the idea of creating a space, you know, that the music lives in, that's definitely inspiring for sure. Yeah.
It was for me for sure when I heard that for the first time. I think it had an influence on me. That and a lot of 90s records that looked for a sound for the songs to exist in, rather than just the best quality sound that you could achieve.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean?
Like,
and so like it seemed much more like of an artistic decision to create a world, you know. And I like that a lot. I always liked
Absolutely.
I like that in records.
I was just going to say, sorry, it removes what is kind of an artificial pressure, I think, to have the objectively highest quality sounding recording. You know, it opens up the space to a much more creative approach to sound. And that did, I mean, that was happening before the 90s, but maybe because of our ages, that's kind of when we experienced it. In the most direct way is with music.
Well, also in that era, I would say, now that I'm a parent, I know that I'm way more uptight about such things because of my children. But if I think back on that period, I was really drawn to any form of danger, and I like in culture. So just so you know, like I was obsessed with like true crime. Like, I know it's a big cottage industry. Not a cottage industry. That's a big thing. Like, I'm not bragging, but, like, I knew, as a teenager, I knew every possible thing about the Manson family. That, you know, I was just really drawn to dark and disturbing stuff. And so when we think about a record like Bone Machine, other records that I'm sure we both share affinities with from that era, the noise... The noise that was part of the ambient recording, if you will, or the ambience of the recording, seemed dangerous. It seemed counter to what you're talking about, Andre and Sandra, I think, is the artifice, the pretense of packaging things and the mediation. Whereas, you know, I know now that Bone Machine and records like it were made with an intention. But to your points, they sounded like they didn't care what the end result was. They sounded like almost found sound field recordings, like something Alan Lomax might have found or captured. And that appealed to me, that notion that
it does. And then as you grow out of it, like as you get a bit older and you realize it's intentional, then I think that's why there was a bit of a backlash against Tom Waits. Maybe is that everyone's then felt betrayed, but he never lied to anyone about his intentions.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean?
I think so.
But it's funny. Yeah. Like you're right. But like, so let's say like a movie like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like the original, a part of what's frightening about that movie is the way it looks, the way it's kept, like the quality of the film, which I don't think was intentional. It was required. Like they didn't have a large budget, but like to make that same movie work again. It has to, like, every time they update it with like a better quality of film, it loses what actually makes it bizarre and frightening, I think.
That it's not all crystal clear. You have to sort of look into the screen to see some details, and there's murk and there's
And it's funny, you were mentioning
it gets your imagination going.
So that's interesting. That reminds me of something too. Is like you were mentioning The Return of the Jedi, which is a high quality film or whatever. But I think there can be murk even in the content. It's not only the, like, where you're not sure what the meaning of something is. So like in Star Wars, I think the reason why Star Wars is so beloved is that it's not a really well worked out story where A leads to B leads to C, well, if Leia is his sister, why did they kiss in the first one? And then fans of it have to work really hard to engage with it because it doesn't make any sense for many reasons. And then you love it. Like, you love it because you have to bring something to it. So I think that's true in some music where you're like, I don't know if, like, is this guy stupid? You know, like, if the lyricist is it's like an untrustworthy narrator, or does this guy really mean this? Yeah. Or that seems, you know, and then you have to work to figure it out. And then you can fall in love with it. It's why so many people like, let's say, objectively bad Bob Dylan records or something like that, you know, or things that were not well received at first, is that they had to work hard to like it.
Well, it's funny you bring up Dylan, because when I think of Bone Machine and its resonance at the time, so this is 94, did that record come out? No, it must have been, was it? Or was it earlier than that? I mean, it was something.
I was going to say even 91.
Yeah, it might be 92. I'm sorry, I don't know off the top of my head. I usually know these things, but I think it's something like that. But when I think about the next record then that Dylan made, which was Time Out of Mind.
That's a beautiful record.
Well, that's my favorite. I think that and Love and Theft are my favorite records, probably. And the murk, the ambiance of that record, I think you can trace. And also, let me also say this. The Tragically Hip made that album Day for Night in 94. There is murkiness.
I don't know that one
because I...
Is that the one with the blue cover?
There's something going on in that era where people like that, who normally made fairly pristine recordings, fidelity wise, whatever, decided to fuck up the sound of the snare drum. Let's do a really tight, fucked up sounding stuff. Like the same sort of band and the same sort of artist. Like Dylan's done all sorts of things, obviously. So I'm not.
It's funny when. I was really into Time Out of Mind. I loved, that was the first Dylan record that came out, you know, while I was a
Dylan fan. Yeah, same here.
And then I didn't like Love and Theft as much when that came out because it felt too bright and too clean and too, like, it didn't feel like the previous
record.
Against the songwriting, that is amazing.
He deliberately said that at the time, that he... You know, there's a book by the engineer whose name, I'm a little rusty with names today because I didn't sleep well. I'll tell you that. You know how your brain does that sometimes? You wake up and you're like, I can't remember how to speak the English language, even though I've been speaking it my whole life. I've lost my vocabulary. But I believe the engineer the engineer on Day for Night and Time Out of Mind is the same guy, Mark Howard. Mark Howard is a goddamn genius. And he wrote a book. I interviewed him for a thing. Like a library in Kitchener had this like speaker series, and I will just say this to you too. I thought I was going to get the recording and be able to share the recording of that talk and share it on the show, and they said that they would do that, but then they're like, well, maybe we should keep it, we'll use it for something, is that okay? I was like, I guess, fine, whatever. But anyway, he was Daniel Lanois' right hand man, and in his book, which he wrote, I will say on his behalf, he wrote a book when he discovered he was terminally ill. And he thought he should just get his... And he's had this incredible career. He worked with Neil Young on Lanois. Like, a lot of the Lanois records he worked with. But they had a bit of a falling out. And in his... By the way, Mark is fine now. He's okay. But he wrote this, like, Burn All My Bridges book. And he really went after Lanois. You guys should find this book. It's out on ECW Press. And I don't have the title in front of me. But... It's fantastic. Sure. It's absolutely fantastic. I've read it a few times. But he goes after Lanois because he basically says, I did everything. Dylan did not like Lanois because Lanois would have these temper tantrums. He smashed a guitar during Time Out of Mind, dismissed. This is all according. This is all allegedly, according to Mark Howard. He smashed a. Yeah, he had like he dented a monitor because he didn't like this blues rock that Dylan was making with Time Out of Mind. Mm. And there's a sequence in the book where things get so frosty a couple weeks in, like Lanois stopped showing up as much, and Mark Howard did everything. And Lanois showed up one day and he said something, and Dylan turned to Mark Howard and said, "Do you hear someone talking?" That's how frosty it was. Anyway, he made a point of saying when he made Love and Theft that he wanted to get away from Lanois's swampy sound. There's some, I know they get along now, because every time I've spoken with Lanois, he's like, yeah, he played me his new record. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on there, but whatever. So they
prefaced it by saying, do you want to hear something?
Sorry. Flipped it. That's right. I get the joke because I said the other joke and then, yeah, the other line. And yeah, right. Anyway, my point is like, yes, I hear what you're saying. It seemed a little, I just think I wrote my master.
That was my reaction in the time. Yeah. I liked the sound of that record.
I do too.
And I felt like it was exciting for me. Like it was exciting to hear a record that swampy. So I think Lanois was perhaps making some good artistic choices. But I think that, as you can see now from the rest of Dylan's career, is that he doesn't really want to work with a producer anymore. He knows what he wants, and he can get what he wants.
He wants to work with a good engineer and take care of everything himself. I think, yeah, I think it was a time and place thing with that particular sound and that record. And then I wrote my master's thesis on Love and Theft, for my English degree. So it, and I just think it's a lyrically rich historical record. Like it's bizarre how many passages are from quotes, historical figures, or you know, quoting historical figures.
Yeah, because it's his first box record from the box, isn't it? His box of doesn't he now? He doesn't write songs anymore. He has a box of quotes and lyrics that have come to him, just one line, and he puts them all in a box. And when it's time to write a song, he like pulls out pages from that box and puts it together, which I think is a great way of doing it. I think it's worked out well.
As an ardent fan, I've not heard this box theory before. Where is that from?
Amazing.
Oh, I made it up. No, I didn't. I think it's, I don't know. I heard it.
Okay, you heard it. Well,
on another podcast.
I'm saying is, I guess what my through line was is that I watched a lot of Robert Altman movies from the Cambridge Public Library. I took out Bone Machine by Tom Waits, and whenever it came out, I think as soon as it came out, I got it from the library, and then I ended up owning it on a couple of different formats. But something about that record at that era, when alternative music or whatever was on the rise too, I think it did shift other people's approaches. And there are probably other records I'm forgetting. And I do think, like I mentioned, Mark Howard is a common denominator in two of the most... For two artists, I think he altered them.
It's like a major label...
I think he altered them.
Not major label, or like big money bands that have a budget. That version of lo-fi.
Yes, trying to sound like they don't have the budget. That's right.
Well, I don't think they were trying to sound like they... I think they were trying to make an artistic statement, but something was in the air, and there was lo-fi as well, and then there was this suddenly just like new ways of hearing records.
Yeah.
Maybe not newer, but just a re-interest in, you know, like, because we had come out of the 80s of like very high fidelity records, and then everyone was like, well, maybe they don't feel like a 1950s record or even a 1960s record. Is it too high fidelity? Like, are there ways that we can use high fidelity to create an artistic statement? And then I think there was also like in the indie rock, there was just necessity, or garage rock, like just lo-fi. There was only two mics and it was recorded on a four track, or, you know.
Okay. Let me put,
then there's like the necessity version.
I get what you're saying. And I'm going to put this to Sandra first. Sandra, we're talking about artists that are making sort of atmospheric sounding records. Let's suggest then that those records feel like they have a baked in warmth to them. Do you think any of what Andre and I and you, I guess, you've been kind of quiet, Sandra. Do you feel like anything that we're discussing?
It's this.
This is the most Sandra has spoken.
That's true.
All I was gonna.
The three-way Zoom is tough because it's like everything gets cut off, and then you don't want to. I don't want to cut you guys off because I like what you're saying.
I was just teasing. But all I was getting at there, the rise, Sandra, the rise of the compact disc is happening at this exact same time, I would say. Like, it started in the late 80s, but people who liked records and you know, now we're really at, like, there was such a reaction to the sound, the how pristine a compact disc sounded compared to a record. There's no warmth to it. It's cold. It's digital. And then these artists like that Andre and I are describing decided to make these records that I think have this haze to them, this warmth to them that you might get, maybe, with a vinyl record. What do you think of that? What do you think of what I just said?
It's possible. I mean, I think that the backlash against digital didn't happen until a little bit later, but it's possible that that was like a pre-backlash.
Well, I think artists are at the forefront of the backlashes, right? They're the ones who lead the way in terms of like, this sucks, so we're going to do something different.
It could have been. I mean, I also think that at that time there was there were a lot of tools available to studio to engineers and producers and musicians to just mess up the sound. And I think the appeal of that creative tinkering is so irresistible that I think that's what, personally, I think that's what drove it more, was just the excitement of all the tools. Yeah. And you know, at that time, people were still probably recording to tape. It could have been some early digital stuff, but they, you know, there's a good chance there were still tape machines there, and you know, so that's all, that already mucks things up a bit. I think also there was, at that time, there was still a strong divide between what was considered mainstream and what was considered an alternative to the mainstream, and you know, defining yourself as not being mainstream was still pretty important. At that time, right?
So some of these bigger money artists might want to, maybe they wanted to seem cool, you know?
Yeah, and just kind of connect with other things going on.
Yeah. I want to say that I appreciate this fruitful discussion about 1994, 1992, and I think it's helpful for everyone to hear our thoughts on those particular years.
You know what? What's crazy, though, Avish, Andre, I just have to say, we're talking about early 90s, but we have not talked yet about Pure Guava, which for Andre and I is a big touchstone. And in making these records, we would often... Am I just misremembering?
I think we spoke about it often. Yeah, as things went along, like my thought or like the approach was a little bit like, what if Ween was serious, what if they wrote you know, serious songs, which they sometimes do, I'm sure, but those aesthetics filtered through the more thoughtful singer-songwriter energy.
Right. Yeah. When Ween ran out of Scotchgard, what would they do?
When they sober Ween. that has a heavy influence on these records that we made together, Sandra.
I do want to get to that. I want to know where this relationship started, because I think I want to go to the root of it, because and I'll start with Sandra on it. Sandra, when did you first hear tell of Andre as a musician, as a musical force? Some of us knew him, I think, from the Deadly Snakes first, probably. But I'm wondering about how you first, if you can jog your memory a little bit, Sandra. Do you remember first encountering him and his music? And then beyond that, let's get to how you started to become friendly, I suppose, and work together. Can you speak to those things?
We actually met. I hadn't heard his music before we met. It was through a CBC, some sort of collaboration thing that the CBC commissioned that involved having the two of us work together on each other's songs, basically playing each other's songs with one another in a CBC studio. Oh. I think before a live audience, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Yeah, there's a somewhere in CBC's archives, you and myself, and then maybe some other musicians who it's so long ago that I don't remember. That would be like 2005.
Yeah, I think that was maybe a second round of things where it became like a broken telephone kind of thing. Exploding telephone.
Exploding telephone. Oh, a telephone explosion. That was a reference to telephone explosion. I didn't know where that was.
Yeah, sir.
They broke it. Okay, that's why it's broken.
Several singers from around all share bits, like slowly put together songs for each other somehow by someone first line. Then someone has to write a poem based on that first line, and then someone has to add music to it.
Yeah.
And then it all goes round robin until you get a series of songs, and then we perform the songs at CBC. And then Sandro and I went to perform it in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. I remember. Do you remember that, Sandro?
I do, yeah.
And then both of us agreed on our way home that we would never do anything like that ever again. just like that was the end of saying yes to stuff. Like I have this funny idea. I'll get all you guys together, and then you waste your life.
So, I mean, obviously, on the one hand, we have this fruitful collaboration that sounds like a long-term result, like way down the line, this rekindled something. But Andre, at the time, what was it about it that was so unsavory and unpleasant, so to speak?
Oh, okay. It was not unsavory or particularly unpleasant. It's just a lot of energy going into something that is not, I have so little time and energy for my own practice, let's say, that these sort of like these kind of parlor game approaches to art seem cute and they seem interesting, maybe even on paper, but ultimately it takes a lot of your creative energy and it takes it away from what you would rather be doing. And to what end? To be so that you're on CBC for 10 minutes? Like, it doesn't, I don't know.
Well, for those of us,
I just realized in myself that's I'm just not interested, and it makes me less interested in even my own art when I do participate in that stuff. So,
I think for those of us in the cultural industry in Canada, when the CBC comes a calling, you tend to say yes because there's money.
Oh yeah,
they pay you very well.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And
right.
then there's also, and then there's royalty things like that. That's the most you're going to get paid, I think, as a musician, is to be played on the CBC and then to be commissioned to do something for them.
For sure.
Right.
But now what you're saying is you have to measure those considerations with, what does this mean to me aesthetically, artistically?
Yeah.
Do I really, really want to be doing this? Like, is it ultimately worth the money to be putting myself in these positions? Is that a fair assessment?
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, just that. And I guess maybe perhaps also when you're younger, it just seems fun and you want to meet other musicians and stuff. But
yeah,
I guess as I get older, I just want to protect what I have and keep close to it rather than blowing it up by kind of expanding into other places maybe I shouldn't be.
We all kind of have been taught to love that institution, and it becomes idealized. And like most things that you idealize from afar, once you get into them, you realize it's maybe not as great as you thought it was going to be. I mean, you're just bound to be disappointed. But at the same time, like I say this as someone who worked there and loved it, and then also felt like, you know, now I'm not there anymore. And so I have I have reasons to feel like, what the hell is going on over there, you know? But
I don't know how Sandra feels about it, but my position was not a knock against the CBC. It's just more that people sometimes will reach out to musicians and they have some idea. And then the idea, like anything that's not naturally coming from the musician's interest in wanting to do it, I feel like turns the music into a bit of a, into something else. It's
absolutely. No, I know. I mean, it's one of, there seems to be, I don't know, Sandro, if you find this, but there seem to be, there's an impulse by some outlets, by some people who make things, to figure out ways to engage with musicians without really engaging with their music or their creative impulses. It is one of the reasons I do what I think is a relatively gimmick-free conversational show. There's sometimes I do things like, let's go through every song, and I don't do those as much anymore, like on a record, which feels like a little bit of an angle, like a hook, but it's not my, but at the same time, at least I'm engaging with the song. It's not like, hey, let's have a hamburger and let's see how spicy a hamburger you can eat. You musician. Like, hey, you musician, what if we go do like, let's do laps at the pool and we'll film it. And then at the end, we'll mention you have a record out at some point. Like, that's the kind of stuff where I feel like there's a disrespect fundamentally for music and music making. And I think some way, but at the same time, I think people recognize that musicians are generally at the forefront of cultural change and are cool. And so they want to, they know it's cool to be, you know, with musicians, but they also don't want to deal with their music. Does that make any sense, Sandra, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's hard to talk about music itself because it resists being, you know, codified or understood or quantified. So, yeah, I think all of these other things act as ways to orbit, you know, kind of orbit the music itself without trying to pin it down. I mean, it becomes a little bit, I think the thing I was a bit uncomfortable with is you turn the process into a performance, and the process and performance are two completely different things.
Right.
And for, you know, for anybody doing something, it can feel a little bit invasive, like you're on the spot and now, you know, you have to perform this thing that you would normally just do in a room alone with the, you know, the people you're working with, and you wouldn't be thinking about an audience watching it, you know, so it makes it feel a little bit artificial.
Yeah.
You know, because when you collaborate with someone, you know, it's messy and it's not, it might be interesting to, you know, to watch as an outsider, but it's not something that those people would consider the same as a performance, as a presentation, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think that for me, I felt a little bit like not taken advantage of, because obviously it's, you know, you're privileged to get asked to do these things, but you do feel like a little bit like you're on display and you have to, you know, now dance, like now do the, you know, do this thing that you do. And it should be, entertaining for us. And, I think it was entertaining, but you know,
I should say a couple of things on this. And Andre, I want you to chime in on this too. Number one, lest I be a hypocrite, when I was at the CBC, I had a show where I would have breakfast with musicians. You were both on episodes of that show. Mm-hmm.
And, it was fun. It was a good breakfast.
Yeah. Those were fun. I hope those were fun. Mm-hmm. And they were. I had a morning show. So I was trying to come up with ways of engaging with musicians, having a nice conversation about their work and their lives. And then something about the meal, because it was a morning show, I thought, let's have breakfast together. There's something about breaking bread with people that really opens them up. Like you...
That's why actually when you were critical of the how spicy can you eat this meatball or whatever, like I don't mind that. I mean, that kind of stuff is like, it creates if it's going to be an interview, it's a way to make the interview interesting.
Yes, and it humanizes people. Okay. It humanizes people as well. And
And if you're going to do a tour of, you know, interview, you know, if you're going to do a series of interviews, that's what it is. At least there's an angle to it. So it's
well,
fine.
The flip side of it, the only other point I was going to make is, as someone who tries to engage with musicians and interviews musicians, I sometimes have this conflict of, is this distracting people from the record, the product that they are ostensibly around to talk about? Like all this chatter about the thing. Is that because Will Oldham once said that to me when we were engaging on?
I'm sorry, I don't know who Will Oldham
is. That?
Well, he goes by the name Bonnie Prince Billy or Bonnie Billy or you know, different Palace. He's a musician.
I'm joking.
We both love him.
No, I know. I know you're joking. I was following up on the joke. I know, Andre. Andre. I know that in like 2006 for Damian Rogers' cover story for iWeekly about Will. You did the cover art for that magazine. So let me say that I got the joke, and I was in. I know what you know is all I'm saying.
Let the record show.
Well, what did he say? What did Will
Owens this
say?
Up, I brought this up in a conversation with his friend Nathan Salzberg recently. So I'll tell the story briefly again, but Will and I...
Sorry, I actually don't know who that is. Oh, that's not it.
Nathan is he's a musician based in Kentucky, cool. Okay. And he also has, for the last 20-odd years, worked for the Alan Lomax archives. He actually appears on the most recent album by the Weather Station as well, I believe.
He's friends with
Tams. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, no, it's fine. Anyway, Nathan is friends with Will, and Will and he collaborate on things sometimes. My point was, I was telling Nathan that Will and I, as you guys might know, Will and I have had many conversations over the last 15 years. In fact, briefly, Andre, so that cover story that you were involved in for I, was around the same time that I first ever spoke with Will. And were you guys, either of you, at the Rotate This In store that Will did?
I was there too.
And so this is, I believe,
wow, we were all there.
Isn't that weird?
That's crazy.
And we didn't know each other, probably, right?
We didn't. Yeah, no, I think Andre, did we? I don't think we met, but I actually remember sort of meeting you outside because Jeremy was there. And Jeremy Finkelstein.
Oh, Finkelstein.
He's our shared friend.
I
think we might have
the friend you share.
We share him.
Who's got him right now? Who's got Jeremy right now?
This weekend.
Sorry. So you met. Okay. So you met there.
I think we actually. Right, but I'm curious about what. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry.
Just tell me what Will Oldham.
Okay. So there's two. Let me just say. I didn't mean to connect this too much, but let me just quickly say this. After that, Rotate This show. Will did three interviews at like a local. This is the first time I ever met Will, is all I will say. And he did three interviews that day while he was in Toronto. And they were at like a club or a restaurant or something, a cafe or a restaurant down the street from Rotate, which was on Queen at the time. And
La Hacienda?
No, I don't think.
I'm sorry.
Anyway,
it doesn't matter.
It was a place I'd never been before, and I don't think I've been since. But anyway, the guy ahead of me was from German Rolling Stone. And he flew in just to talk to Will, and then I can't remember who the other person was, and I was allotted 20 minutes at the end. So Will and I was very nervous, as I was in those days, because I was still new to this, and so I had a sheet of paper with like an introduction, because I was double purposing it for my college radio show, the Mish Vish Interracial Morning Show, and I was using it as the interview for a print piece as well. So I had my questions and an intro and an outro all typed out in very small print, and I had my little mini disc recorder recording Will. Will and I do an interview for 20 minutes. Then we sit there and talk for like 3 hours. He just was so lovely, and he liked me.
Oh, that's nice.
And it was that same era that we were all connected.
I like that your voice broke when you said he liked me.
I don't know. Will's just been a presence in my life ever since then, and we connect. We have all these sort of mutual colleagues and friends now. So I have a real love for him.
That's really nice.
I have a love for him. So Will,
I've never met him.
So I've interviewed him many, many times for radio, for this podcast. He's been on two or three times. And for the last record, which I believe is called I Made a Place, his representative reached out, said Will has specifically asked if you're up for a chat about this new record for Creative Control. I said, yes, absolutely, of course, and I'll double purpose it for a magazine piece for Exclaim or somebody. They're like, great. And then they doubled back and said, Will has actually informed me that he does not want to do any podcasts. He wants to talk to you, but not for your show. And I was like, oh, well, you know, initially you're a little hurt. And then when I talked to Will for the interview, which was still going to be for a print piece, he said, I asked about it, and he said something, I think, quite astute. Two things. One, what I said earlier, some days you wake up and you can't find words and you don't know why. Your vocabulary is just not there. And to have something documented like this, like an audio conversation, when you're not at your best and you don't know why, that's a little, you know, that's something to give you pause. Like, do I really, what if I'm not in a good space that day? And this is going out all over the place. Right. Just like today, like all of us today. Exactly. And then the second thing he said was also, if I give an hour-long interview, audio interview with someone, and I want them to hear my record, they're spending time potentially listening to this interview instead of listening to the record. And I was like, that is very fascinating, and it is a conflict I have sometimes because, and this goes back, I don't know where this goes back to in our conversation, but you guys make records together. And artists do.
I almost forgot that.
Yes, I'm sorry. That's just a long story. You guys, everyone makes a record, and then we in the journalism world try to break it down. And there, and I think there are artists out there like I spent 3 years making a record. Isn't that enough of my time? Like, can't you just listen to the record?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, I mean, I don't know. It's a pleasure to be asked these things. It's more just, I think, you know, what you're saying is it's important for people to remember that there's a big difference between the experience of listening to the music and committing some time to it versus the easier kind of more immediately satisfying experience of hearing an interview with someone and getting your fix of them or getting your getting a read on them, who they are, what how they are, and making a decision about their music based on that,
because
it is easier.
Well, I don't want to shortchange my own work. Like, I'm telling you, this is creeping. Andre, do you have thoughts on this before I go on? Sorry, that was a very long... too long an anecdote? I'm sorry.
I was surprised by his... I thought he was going to say something else. Like, it doesn't... He doesn't always seem like an artist that it needs to be putting his best foot forward. He doesn't seem to do that in his music. Like, that's... sounds mean, but like he seems to be a bit like warts and all, or like, or just whatever did happen is what the music is. That's my perception of him. I haven't checked him in a while. And so it surprises me that he would be concerned about how he would come off in an interview. And then another thing is that I don't see podcasts and conversations in any way taking away from someone's time with the actual music. If anything, if I heard an interview with him, it would make me want to listen to his music more than had I not heard an interview with him. My issue with talking about, like, luckily in this interview, we've never talked about the record at all. But like, but when you talk about your own stuff, is that it starts, you start like codifying or solidifying your ideas. You repeat the same thoughts that were never thoughts before. You had to create thoughts about your own music. It's like having to, you know, when you have to write a bio or you have to write, like all the stuff that comes with being a musician when you, have to do that. Like, I hate doing it because I never have had to think about the music other than how I think about it when I'm creating it, which I'm very comfortable with, but to reflect on it and then say what it is, I find is just like, it feels terrible so having to talk about music is what's harder for me than being worried that I'm not in the right place to talk about it or that it will take people's interest away from actually.
I do think in Will's case, I think he's an in the moment fellow. And I think that's how he felt at that time, because he has subsequently done a few things for the Superwolves record that recently came out that sort of are, but they are fun ways of dealing with self-marketing and choices you can make with social media and being on people's shows and all those things. Like, I do think there's merit in what he's saying, but I also think that's how he felt at the time. And I do think it's also at that time in particular, this is obviously way before a pandemic. This is a few years ago. Will you, Andre, like, I appreciate what you're saying. And I obviously, as someone who does and contributes to the culture of consumption by making a show at least once a week, I hope people listen to it. But I also appreciate maybe the subtext of what, again, I'm paraphrasing Will. In this context, it's all from my memory, and I hope I'm not mischaracterizing his thoughts or ideas on it, but there is also a glut of things, I think, is the subtext. I made a record, I'll do some press, but everyone's doing that every minute of every day now in some capacity, some sort of promotion, some sort of recontextualizing in the immediate aftermath of releasing something. that people could process themselves and make a form opinions and thoughts about, but almost immediately you can read their insights about it, and then that might steer you in a way, interpretation wise or mood wise, emotionally. Like if you guys were to talk about a song on your new record, which I know Andre does not want to talk about, but the album Further Up Island has a song called Further Up Island has a song called Wild Goldfish, for example. And when I hear it, it's a very playful song. It's an allusion. There's lots of allusions to other people's work, and I think it's very clever. And we could talk about it, and you could counter my interpretation of it. We could talk about it right now. And then when people hear us talk about it, they'll hear that song and be like, oh, right. I know what that song's about because the guy told me, or I heard him tell someone exactly what that song's about. And now there's a little bit of a filter between me and the song from the artist's own words. Whereas, so do you see?
I agree. No, I agree with that. I think that that's what I'm saying. Like, so, and that even, that works in the audience's mind. Like what you're describing is true in the mind of the audience, but it's also true in the mind of the artist who's now been forced to make a statement about their own song. And then now when they sing it, or at least it happens to me, now when I sing it, I'm like, oh, this is the song about the thing, the stuff that I said it was about.
Yes.
Instead of existing in a pretty nebulous world where there's multiple meanings and there's the initial meaning of the intent of writing it and then what it actually sounded like when you listen back to it and what, you know, so there's like all these multiple floating meanings. And once you hammer them down, even as the singer of the song, you lose a magic space that you have with your art. And it's a bit of a shame, but it's also fun to talk about it. And it also doesn't, you know, it's not, it's only true in the moment and then it passes. You have to learn how to have a relationship with your own statements in a sense. Like, and you have to live with what you've said.
And it can help to get some different perspective on what you're doing too, to talk about it. Even if you don't end up agreeing with what, with yourself, you know, like I listen, if I ever listen back to something I've said, 99% of the time, I don't agree with it anymore.
I could, as you're speaking, totally. Sandra, the last couple, so Sandra, you've been on this iteration of my, this show, I was going to say this iteration of my cultural contributions to the world, which is a long way of saying this show. You've been on this show a few times, and I feel like the last time I did try to dig into some lyrics about the record that was out at the time, and I think some of it threw you. I remember that, you being like, well, that wasn't my intention, or Your Honor, I object. I object to this line of questioning. And I said overruled, as I recall. all I'm saying is, like, it does, I get it. Like, you get a direct, when you talk to a journalist or someone who's spent time with your record, they have a feeling about it and a thought about it, and it doesn't always mesh with yours. And that can be good or bad, as you're saying, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
I think it's... go ahead, Sandra, sir.
I mean, I don't know if it's good or bad. I think it's just... I mean, what's nice about it is that, you know, I actually get to learn about what somebody else thinks about, you know, something that I did or was involved in. And that can be just as illuminating for me as it is to hear my own thoughts, you know, post-doing of the thing. You know, again, it's all just kind of material that, you know, it's dangerous if it dominates your thinking about it, but it can be useful in just expanding the scope of your relationship with the thing. I mean, I am still quite protective. Like you're saying, Andre, I feel like I need to, you know, sort of protect that space, but at the same time, it's good to, you know, feel some of that discomfort or the rub or whatever, because you do, I do end up learning, you know, something about myself or about, you know, about you, Vish, like learning what it is that, that you think about something that, you know, someone has done, and it can be eye opening, you know, and it tells me something about you too.
That's fair.
I think that's true. Yeah. I think that's totally true.
Yeah.
That's good.
I mean, ultimately, I feel like we make things in for ourselves, but we also, you know, secretly or not so secretly, really want to know what other people think as well about these things.
And that's true. Yeah. That's true of me too. I was just emailing this to someone who was on the show recently, who sent me a nice note about the experience. And I wrote this to them, and it's sort of fresh in my mind. I'm happiest when the guest is happy. Whatever anyone else says or thinks about something that we've done together, and maybe I'm over romanticizing this, but I sometimes like to look at these conversations I have as little collaborations, because I feel like I have invested something as a fan, I guess as a journalist. I feel sometimes that word is not appropriate for what I do with this show, because I often am talking to people that I love or their work I love, so I feel almost not objective. Like I ask people to be on the show because I really like what they're doing, so it's hard for me to be over. I'm not coming across like, come on the show so I can criticize song 8. I'm more like, let's celebrate this thing that you made together, and I'll give you a firsthand account of what someone might think of it, like you say, Sandro, and hopefully that puts them in good stead. Like if they're unhappy with something, a guest, I mean, then that's the worst feeling for me. And I'm sure as both of you in working with others, as producers, as you know, artists, when you collaborate with others, visual artists, I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, if your colleague isn't happy with something you've done together, Andre, that's got to be the worst feeling, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. Yes. Probably. It's not a good feeling. And I think there's nothing wrong with talking about stuff. As long as like in a podcast sort of situation, in a conversation, artists or like songwriters, I think, are happy to talk about their work, as long as you let them wiggle out of things that they're not sure about. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's fine. And yeah, in collaboration. Yeah. It's a terrible feeling to, if you're not jiving with the person you're working with, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's why I don't like, as a visual artist, I don't like to do commissions, like when someone is asking for something.
Yeah.
Because they've already created the image in their mind, probably. And then you can't help but disappoint them when you deliver what you've actually done.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's like a bad feeling. Mm.
It's a special skill.
To deliver what someone wants.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not one that I have any interest in developing as a skill.
Well, I do think the idea of something and actually executing it, there's an interesting sort of distance between those things in terms of your mind's eye. Like, yeah, I'm going to, in my case, for example, I'm sure there are people who are like, yes, I want to do an interview. And then when it comes out, they hear their own voice, or in your cases... Yeah, or in your cases, you hear a song in your head, and then you put it down, and then you hear it back at you, and that's when you realize that maybe it wasn't as strong an idea, or that your involvement in it somehow isn't exactly what you wanted, so you go through a refinement process until you get to what you were really chasing in your imagination.
Do you ever, Sandra, do you experience that ever? Do you ever record something and then it wasn't what you thought it was going to be?
Oh, totally. So I like the idea, the romantic notion of capturing something, you know, what's it called? Electricity. What's it? What do they say? Capture lightning in a bottle? Is that the term?
Yeah.
Some people say
some people say it. I love that idea, but to me, it's not really the way the creative process works. Like, I think of making records much more like making a painting or making a sculpture or a collage or something, where you're, you know, you're throwing things at a surface and then, you know, without really thinking about it too much, and then you're removing things to try and, you know, get to the essence of what you're seeing or what you're hearing before you.
Yeah.
And wait, what was the question now? I'm totally confused.
Whether or not you ever record something and then are disappointed by the idea when you hear it back.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but it sounds like you don't even work in that kind of way at all.
No, I mean, disappointment is maybe too strong a word. It's more like, oh, okay, so that's what it actually is. So now let's work with that and you know, try and make that thing the best that it can be, as opposed to, yeah, it's really dangerous to go, okay, I want to make this song, it's a, like a Van Morrison thing or whatever, and you go in and you hear yourself back and you're like, oh, I don't sound like Van Morrison.
Interesting. What, you know, interesting. How do we interesting make artist to allude to in this day and age.
That, what is he at the? Is he not cool these days?
Yeah. There's some going on there. I really feel like he's putting us on. When I what's his latest record called? It's called like Van Morrison latest record project or something.
Oh yeah.
I feel like the whole thing. Yeah, I think he's trolling us. I really don't. I bet he's not an anti-vaxxer. I bet he doesn't. I think it's just like an old man trying to get attention. Because if you listen to any of the record, it's like a comedy album. Have you heard my latest record recording project? I can't remember what it's called. That's the line of the first song. He's clearly anyway. Sorry.
It's very similar to those Bang record contractual record blowing your nose.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of humor.
Great. He's cool, man. I don't care. He can be against vaccinations and masks and lockdown if he wants. I mean, I don't agree, and I think it's potentially a little dangerous if people really are listening to him, but. Yeah. His records are absolutely
well, but he's also palling around with Eric Clapton, who I think we can all agree is not.
No, that guy, I can unequivocally say I do not.
No,
like
he's
that
not likable, and he's always been terrible. But now, yeah, he's all. So
Clapton,
anyway,
is dog.
Sorry, you.
He's dog. Clapton is dog.
Anyway, you wanted to sound like I appreciate what you're saying about Van Morrison and.
Well, it's interesting, though, coming from Sandra as a producer. I like the way your approach, and I think I benefited from your approach of listening to what is happening and then building and developing what is happening rather than coming into the studio, which is the way I would imagine most bands are, is like, we have to be really prepared.
Yes,
we have to be really ready. Yeah. And so you've written everything in advance and you have all your parts ready. And then you're going to go into the studio and then you record it, which it is an approach that I can see working. And it obviously works for a lot of people. But it also is the logical approach, right? It would be, it's common sense that's how you would approach it. But if you have already made a decision about what the record is going to sound like before you reach the studio, then you'll never hear what you're actually doing. It's kind of like being a parent and deciding what job your child is going to have before the child is born.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to also listen to what the child is saying about what they like and what they don't like, obviously. And in fact, you should be deferring completely to that.
Yeah. It's a missed opportunity to really collaborate or deal with the material at hand, you know, as opposed to, you know, we always have our ideas of what we want, but we kind of need to leave that, you know, not silence it, but dim it a little bit when we go into a process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Up Island follows Croak and the Weeds. Are these the only two records that you two have made together thus far?
Three?
Are you crazy?
I can't remember how many there are.
It's a trilogy.
Trilogy. Sandro made the first one too. It's a trilogy. Sorry. I get confused because Andre, you were talking to me the last time about an older record that you had made that was, the trilogy started with Blue Fog, right? That's what you told me.
The original trilogy.
No.
Wait, which one?
Uh-oh. That's the... No. All right. Uh-oh. You want to talk trilogies?
I'm confused. I'm confused. There's two trilogies? Okay, this has nothing to do with the Blue Fog trilogy. Okay, I get it now.
Yeah, this one is Under Grape Leaves, Croak in the Weeds, and Further Up Island. Those are with Sandra. Okay,
right. Great titles, by the way. Yeah, great titles.
I know.
but there was another trilogy that is yet to be completed. Is that right?
There is a trilogy that I'm prior to this that I made on the label Blue Fog, but only two records came out and there's a third one that is unfinished.
Right. Sorry. I'm sorry. There's a lot going on in my life and I got confused and you're
I wouldn't expect anyone to know that. This is how I think about things so that I can keep them organized.
Listen, Andre, if you're going to be some sort of weird Canadian indie rock George Lucas character, you're going to have to get people, you know, people are going to be...
I'm looking like him more and more these days.
People are going to be confused. Which, is this the prequel? Which trilogy is this exactly? So, okay, so...
This is a standalone
trilogy. Standalone trilogy. It has nothing to do with the other trilogy. You just like to work in threes. And except you don't always, they don't always come to fruition.
Except this is the only trilogy that I've completed as three. So, no, the one before with Blue Fog, it's done. It's like it's in the can, as say, but it's unmixed. It's unmixed. It's like over 10 years old unmixed record that is very good, actually, I think.
Got to get
and
on it.
I may say so myself.
Yeah, I want to hear that, and I hope you get it done.
It's killer. Michelle McAdory sings on it.
Oh, she's lovely. Yeah.
Wow.
Jen Castle sings on it.
Well, come on, man. Let's get this sucker out. I mean, Blue Fog's on a tear right now, pressing vinyl records and reissuing things on some level. You should get in on that gravy train, the Blue Fog gravy train.
Unreleased album reissue.
Yeah, well, that would be a bit different. Yeah. Anyway, I apologize for my confusion. But again,
thank you for letting me speak to the Blue Fog.
Yes, I think it's important to finish that trilogy if you can at some point as well, whoever is in charge of that. So this is the conclusion of this trilogy. Does it stand to reason that you would work together again, Andre? Is that your hope at some point?
I think immediately. Yeah, we'll just the fourth record in the trilogy. Will be I want to work with Sandro. We don't have any firm plans right now but I'm letting you know, Sandro, and we have spoken about it before, but I want to make more records with Sandro for sure.
Sandro, what do you think, and I have my feelings on it, but what aesthetically, beyond your involvement, Andre's obviously involved in making his own records, what aesthetically connects these as a trilogy? So, I don't know, aesthetically, sonically, from what you can tell in terms of what Andre's writing and singing about. Do you have a sense of that?
I mean, on the material level, we used a lot of the same instruments throughout the three. We used Andre's drum machine, which I am going to resist trying to remember the model number of, and I think is good if we don't say the model number, because we don't want the price to go too high on reverb.com.
always thinking of everyone else. Thank you, Sandra. That's very nice of you.
And we used Andre's nylon string guitar and his style of playing, which is very specific to him. His voice, obviously. There's probably only, I think, one or two synthesizers that we used on all three records.
Yeah.
And then a very important piece of it was this little, like a kid's kind of keyboard, like with some samples on it that Andre has had, I imagine, forever. And that is on all three records. And that's a big part of the sound. So it's that stuff. But then it's also maybe even more about our working method, which is very, very casual and quick. We made all of the records very quickly and always in short sessions, usually 2 to 3 hours maximum.
Oh, okay.
And we did a lot of work, like a lot of labor went into the, kind of working on the material, but we did it very quickly. And so we didn't have time to second guess ourselves too often, I don't think. It doesn't feel like we did. And we also, I think a big part of it is that our shared love and appreciation for absurdity.
Right.
I kind of feel like that's a big part of the spirit of these records, is that we both appreciate absurd ideas and doing things that are that would be considered maybe kind of jokey or people might laugh at and say, oh, okay, now let's do the real thing.
Well, I texted Andre the first few times I was listening to this record and saying it did make me, there are occasions where I just laughed out loud. I LOL'd. And
you lolled.
They're comedy records.
And that's, you know, that's important. I mean, that's such a hard thing to integrate into songwriting, I find.
Yeah.
But Andre does it beautifully, and it gave me an opportunity to embrace that more as well and to go with it, because I love that. I love doing it, and I love it when it's done well.
Well, I will say, I'll say Andre has a tone in his singing voice where you assume something is very earnest. It's just something about your delivery, Andre, where like I'm like, okay, this guy is very serious. And then you actually home in on what you're saying. You're like, oh, this is kind of, we've been taken for a little bit of a ride here. This earnest sounding fellow is having a bit of a laugh. And I think that's really, to Sandra's point, I'm sorry I interrupted you, Sandra, but to Sandra's point, I mean, that's very, it's just very, it's fun. Yeah. It's entertaining. You are an entertainer on some level. Would you agree? Yeah.
I think I'm an entertainer, but at the, I'm aware of my, I think I developed like as a lyricist anyway, that in some direction because of hearing my own voice and the since and how my voice seems sincere. It's like, there's a part of it that is reactionary to it because I know what it sounds like.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I am like, I hope many people very eager to hear what comes next in the trilogy. There's got to be a fourth and a fifth album in this trilogy.
I think it won't. It won't be. It'll be another trilogy. It'll be. Sorry, if it probably it doesn't need to be a trilogy. I have to break out of that. You know, like the like thinking of records as trilogies. As I was saying to you before, I think the last time we were.
Yeah.
Speaking Vish, it's really just a way to organize things in my mind and keep myself working with the same tools and to develop them beyond just one record. Right. And it's also a way of telling myself that there will be more records.
Yes. Yes.
That not every idea has to be shoehorned into this one statement. It's good psychologically to think of things as just part of a larger group.
It's like a promise to yourself that you have to, you'll continue. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a way of alleviating some kind of pressure or something. But then I'd like to make at least like what I'd like to work with Sandro again, but I don't think I need to create the idea of it being a new trilogy or anything like that. Though it'd be nice to know that we would work together at least three more times.
Well, I get that there's a sonic continuity in terms of like instrumentation chosen and whatnot. So
we'd have to do something totally different.
Maybe totally different. Maybe
I think we. It's well, we were so locked in with those. No, we were so locked in with those tools that it'd be very easy to do something different by just changing the type. Like just there's, it'd be very easy to do something very different.
Well, for those who, and then, like, there's 14 songs on the latest album, and I wonder if there's any material that didn't make it. Like the last one, Croak in the Weeds, I believe had 9 songs. So this is, you know, almost double. I mean, the lengths of the songs and the whatnot are, no, I mean, they're not, no, they're all at least a 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I guess some of them are, well, there's one song that's a minute. But anyway, they're substantive in their own way. Was there anything that didn't make it into the current trilogy? Is there stuff on the cutting room floor, Andre?
I think there's one song cut from Further Up Island.
Okay.
Mm. I think there's only one song cut.
Like that we did or that you wrote but that we didn't do?
I wrote it, we recorded it, and probably wasted a lot of time playing it over and over again. And then in the end, we were like, kind of a crappy song, right? And then we left it off the record. The song was good. It's just that the lyrical content of the song was mean-spirited, and the rest of the record didn't have the same spirit.
What was that?
We were like, let's just leave it off. And then we left it off, and then the record fell together very easily.
Right. I totally forgot about that song. It was so mean. I forgot about it.
What caused the?
No, it wasn't mean.
What inspired? Well, what inspired the meanness? Do you remember?
Well, it's written in character. Like a lot of the songs on these records are like from the perspective of someone that I don't believe is myself.
Right.
So like it's a character that I've invented, though I'm sure a lot of it has to do with me. And in this song, this character is a song sung to a woman from this man's perspective and he's into her, but it's creepy. It was creepy.
Okay,
and
okay.
It just didn't sit well with the rest of the expansiveness of the rest of the record, or like, because this character's kind of a bit of a dreamer or whatever, and he's floating through the world.
Mm.
And I didn't like it. I didn't want him to be this kind of person. So it was fine for him to not have that song.
So Sandra, this decision seems like it was a bit of a surprise to you at this point, or that you didn't remember it.
I blocked it out.
Yeah. So bad.
That was a dark day. That was a dark day, man. We took a long break after that one.
No, and you know what? It wasn't really that. I think that's why I didn't want it on the record or was unsure of it. And then I think with you were like, I think the chord structure sounded too traditionally in jazz song.
Oh, interesting.
Like it sounded genre instead of.
I see. Okay.
And you were like, yeah. I don't know.
I only broach it to wonder if there, it sounds to me then, if and when you start to work together again, you have to start from scratch. There's nothing that you're going to revisit from, I mean, maybe Andre, you have things that you were percolating and you wrote them down or whatever, but ostensibly you're going to start from scratch with the sound and the lyrics and everything. So that's all I was kind of getting at. Just curious.
Yeah, I don't think there's much in the archives, if that's the bigger question. Like,
yeah.
I think we always worked so fast, we always kind of used pretty much everything that we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's funny, speaking about archives, I don't know, and sequels and prequels, there is sort of a prequel movie to this series of records that Sandra and I made, a soundtrack to a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And that soundtrack was rejected.
Oh, yeah.
But that soundtrack was really where a lot of our working relationship and our aesthetics that we share when working together were developed, yeah. I think.
Right.
Yes, definitely. We did two films together. One was accepted. And it was lovely. And then the other one was not accepted. It was amazing. It was a disappointment in a way, but understandable.
The music was amazing, but the film.
The music was amazing.
Just so people know, the film in question was Fast and Furious 7. And that's their loss, frankly, that they didn't accept that.
It would have been less exciting to watch those car chases with this guy.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah, and I think the people who made the movie, like, they weren't like against it as music. They weren't like, this is bad music. It was just like, I think they felt it was not doing what the scenes needed it to do or whatever. It's interesting.
Have you each subsequently seen the movie and the choice they made for the soundtrack?
No, never did. Did you see it?
I've never
seen
it.
I have no interest in seeing that movie again.
Well, I mean, we saw it while we were working on it, 20, 30 times.
Oh, no. But I mean the end result when they were like, here's the direction we wanted or we decided to go in. That's what I meant.
I'm totally curious about it, but at the same time, I would rather do almost anything with my time.
Well, yeah. You know what I mean? But like, I mean, on some level, wouldn't you be curious to know where these people were coming from? Just like, if I were...
Yeah, I am totally curious. If I could just skim it for 10 minutes, then yes, but I wouldn't sit down and watch that movie.
It's like if you get broken up with and you don't know why, and then you see your partner with like your ex-partner with like a new person, you're like, I guess that's what they like. And you're like, that's not me. I guess they're just a totally different person than I thought when we first had the discussion about being together. Anyway, maybe it's
when
also...
When you put it that way, it sounds like a really bad idea.
Yeah, it's sort of don't want more morbid curiosity to go back to the project that rejected you. Yes, that's, again, as Sandra said earlier, sometimes people learn about me, and this is what you've learned. I'm a sucker for punishment. I like the trauma. Anyway, all right, this is fascinating. We've talked about this project in an Andre from an Andre perspective, so I trust, Andre, that your next work that we're going to hear will eventually be with Sandro. Unless, I'll just briefly ask you this, are you working on anything else that we should be aware of?
Well, I am actually working on a record right now that's not with Sandro.
Oh, what?
You knew that.
I'm kidding. I know, I'm kidding.
Can you say anything about it?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no... It may not come out. I think it will probably, but I'm working with Joseph Chabasson. Do you know Jose?
I know Joseph. Well, he's been on the show, and we've talked about coming back, and I just haven't been able to connect with him yet, because he's been making some great, great music lately on his own and with people. So that's great.
So he and I, with other musicians, I'm pretty into collaboration. Working with Sandro has really opened me up to a lot of collaboration. I'm into just working with other people. And so this would not be my record. This is a shared record with other people.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's leave it at that, because I know that you don't want to let too much of the... You don't want to let all the cats out of the bag. Why are there more than one cat? The expression is, let the cat out of the bag.
Mm. Yes.
And as I say it, there's probably a really nefarious reason why the cat is in the bag. Mm. So let's just excise from our thoughts and hearts that I use that expression. I don't like it. Anyway, but all I'm saying is I don't think we should spill too many beans.
Right.
Maybe the beans are in the bag with the cat.
I don't know. Nefarious beans?
Nefarious beans. Yeah, there's your album title right there.
Yeah,
Sandro, before we wrap up though, Sandro, I want to check in with you too, because as I've said, you're a gifted artist in your own right. Are you working on music or anything that we should be keeping an eye out for?
Definitely working on stuff. Nothing is on the horizon as far as being released, but. Yeah, writing a lot and playing with the cows, playing for the cows, and always working on records with other people too, helping people out, this and that. Yeah, staying active.
In the times when you could perform, and I guess those times may be coming back, or maybe not, who knows, did you guys ever play shows together behind these records, Andre?
Sort of, did we? Sandra and I played some shows together, but we didn't collaborate on... Like, I don't think we shared a stage on my songs.
No.
I sang on one of yours.
Yeah, I think we did a short mini tour with Dan, and then you guys came... We did the tune, Everybody's Paris, together, but we never...
Oh, yeah,
But then when you did your set, it was always solo. So we haven't, we haven't played your material together, but you have played these records. You've done release shows for these with
I played with a band in Toronto that I call Sunset Pig. Mm-hmm. And we play the songs kind of in a very different, like we put them in a much different context when we play
them. Yeah, I've seen that band play at least once and play, I think, songs from this era, I believe.
Mostly.
Yeah, and Sandra, when you say Dan, were you referring to Dan Behar, Destroyer?
Dan Behar, yeah.
Yeah,
Dan
just making Behar. Sure. Yeah. Just trying to keep everyone in the
Dan
loop.
Dan Bajar.
Bajar,
Dan,
yes.
The Beige.
Okay.
He's been on the show a couple times, at least.
He's been on this show, four times, I think, something like that.
Oh.
Which is, I think...
Love him.
I think that's unusual for him to do stuff like that. Is that right? Does he do many podcasts? Do you know?
Sure.
I don't know.
Can you guys? Can you check your?
I'd like to hear him on a podcast talking about.
I love his voice. The sound of his voice is mesmerizing.
Yeah, he was on. He was one of the first people I interviewed when I moved here, remote. So in January 2020, we talked. I think is the last time, January, February, and then. Yeah, he's lovely, and he's been very kind to me. There's a lot of people who are very kind to me, and I don't understand it. As you can tell, there's no reason.
Well, you're a kind person.
Well, I try to be, but I mean, they're just very kind to make time for me where they don't always do it, and I think that's nice. It's nice that they feel comfortable talking.
Maybe he gives off the impression that he wouldn't want to do interviews, but the first time that... Oh, I guess it wasn't the first time I had met him. I toured with him a long time ago, and then, but I asked, I interviewed him for a magazine.
Oh,
it was like really, it was the only time I've ever really interviewed someone, and it was a great interview. And he was really open about talking about making his record, and it was when he was working on Kaput.
Yeah, like when I worked at CBC, we did a chart show, and we would often try to call the number one artist and sort of surprise them with the news. And but Dan would always refuse that, and that gave him a bit of a reputation among some of my colleagues as being aloof or whatever. But then I saw him at Sappy Fest the year he was there in Sackville, New Brunswick, and I approached him. I was at CBC at the time. And I said, hey, can we just do a quick thing? And he said, yes. And we did it we were either on the street or in the grass or something, lying down. Mm. And he was great. We talked about what he ate. Oddly enough, we talked about what he ate for breakfast. And I feel like he went to that really cool cafe that's sort of often on the George Street there. And I can't think of the name of it right now.
Oh, the diner?
No, not the diner. There's like a little coffee shop, I think.
Oh, and, right.
Or they serve, or is it a restaurant? I don't remember what it's called. But anyway, he ate there. Yeah. Anyway, he was lovely. And then ever since then, Jose Chabison connected me with Dan ahead of a show he was playing in Guelph. And ever since then, yeah, like to Sandra's point, he's been on 3 or 4 times. I don't remember exactly. But always very funny and forthcoming. Like you, playful, funny, has a sense of humor. People don't get it sometimes. I didn't get it the first time I heard it. A colleague had to review a record.
That's because he doesn't explain his jokes like we explain our jokes.
I think it's a voice thing. It's a delivery thing. It's a cadence thing. Like you, Andre, I think like if you're just invested in what you're hearing, you assume the person is being serious. And Dan has that kind of dry delivery where you assume he's a very self-serious person. But in reality, like if you actually, again, focus on what he's saying and how he's and what, then the more you listen, you're like, oh my god, this is so brilliantly witty beyond being heartfelt and sincere when he needs to be. He's just incredibly funny and sardonic, and so he really scratches this. Anyway, we've done a lot of celebrating of other artists. I think, Andre, you should be satisfied. We've barely talked about this album, Further Up Island. It's good. I think it's fine.
I feel really satisfied.
What a relief.
I'm sure the label is pleased. Where can people go to learn, Andre, where can people go to learn more about you and Further Up Island? Let's promote the record now that we're almost done.
Like record stores. Mm-hmm. And I guess the record label, the Telephone Explosion. I guess that's where they could hear it, or the Bandcamp. I don't know, actually. That's a funny, hard question for me to answer because I don't know.
Do you have online destinations that you tend to for yourself?
I have one social media, Instagram account. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they could follow that. It's my name, Andre, D-A-L-Etier, Andre, David Angus Laroc Etier, Andre Dal Etier.
What are you, crossing the border here? Why are you giving everyone your whole information? It's fine. It's not an interrogation. You don't have to say your whole name.
Oh, that's right. I'm saying that's the name. It's at that. But anyway, I'm sure they would find it.
Okay. So
I'm trying to be helpful.
Follow you on Instagram and go to Telephone Explosion. Sandro, similar question. If people were to keep tabs on you, so to speak, anywhere you want to send them?
Oh, I got kicked off of Instagram. And
did you actually get kicked off? I noticed you weren't there.
Yeah, for some reason. I don't know why they thought I was not. I think it just because I wasn't doing anything on it, so I wasn't using it correctly. So, that not really. Not a lot of... there's maybe a bit of stuff on Facebook once in a while, but I'm not really keeping things up. My website is really out of date, too.
But, I tagged the website in a recent episode I did with the artist Kotz. Kotz, Steph Yates.
Yeah.
And so I tagged the website. I didn't delve into how updated it was, but there is a section, I think, that alludes to people who, you know, your services as a recording engineer, producer. That's all. Are you taking clients? Is it just you and the cows? Or are you working with people?
Oh, yeah. No. People can always email me through the website. And, there's Bandcamp for music. And for the production stuff, it's out there. It's floating around somewhere.
Okay, cool. Andre, Google. I know you're... Andre.
V.
Yeah, go ahead.
How can people contact you?
I'd rather they didn't. And I'll leave it at that. Andre, you're a keen podcast listener, and I'm starting to...
I like podcasts.
Yeah, I'm starting... Does anyone else do this thing at the end where they give the guest a chance to kind of do a little self-promotion? Because I'm starting to wonder if it's too awkward to
do.
You
know who does that? You know who... It's funny. The guy that does the Hot Wings things on YouTube.
Hot Ones, yeah.
Hot Ones. at the end, he's like, okay, and now you can do your thing.
Right.
Do like, tell me, what are you promoting?
Right.
And he does that at the end. But other than that, people don't, I guess they do.
Is it bad? I guess what I'm asking, is this bad that I do it? Or is it good?
No.
I like to give
people. No, it's good. It's good. Okay.
I think it's good. It's good. I'm a bad case for it because I don't know. I don't have, I don't have anything other than I want people to hear the record, listen to it on the streaming services, or buy it from a store.
Yeah.
Your favorite store, your favorite streaming services.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoy it. If you really enjoy it, you can contact me through Instagram and tell me. But if you don't like it, you can keep your opinions to yourself.
I like that we started this promotion a little sheepishly, and then you went hard sell at the end. You were just totally like, you were Don Draper at the end. You were just like, here's what you need to do. And I,
well, that's it.
Yeah.
But that's the problem with the question would be like, well, how is that those answers going to vary? But I,
well, here's what I'll say about it and why I do it beyond, you know, the obvious, like directing people. I think it's usually insightful to hear from any generation of guest what they're using and what they aren't using at all. Because it teaches you a little bit. Often a younger artist will say, I'm not on Facebook anymore. Or an older artist, frankly. I don't use Facebook anymore, so I only use Instagram. And that is frequent. I don't use Twitter. I frequently hear this, and it just speaks to what people want to convey about themselves. I'm okay to share a photo or an image with a little comment, but I don't want to talk, meaning Facebook is primarily, I mean, I know they're all kind of the same. You can do the same stuff with each of them, but there is something about the mentality. And to your point, Sandro, our website's dead. Some people are like, I haven't updated my website in 5 years. Just follow me on Instagram. I guess what I'm doing is a little bit of contemporary and I think historical maybe work in that we're, I'm trying to identify the trends at the time. So if 5 years from now, everyone...
I can tell you the trend is that people are leaving Facebook.
Well, no, obviously that's... Instagram. But let me say this to you.
People are getting kicked off of Instagram. that's
some
a huge
of us,
trend right now.
Some of us are getting...
I think you just forgot where you left it in your phone.
Some of us are getting kicked off Instagram. People, like you say, are leaving Facebook in droves. Guess who owns Instagram? Facebook. So like, why are they leaving it in droves? I think some of us have these kind of conflicted ethical reasons for leaving it, but they're going.
It's not. I don't even mean ethically. It's just, I think younger generations perceive Facebook as what their mothers and fathers are on.
Right. Yeah.
So they don't want
to
be on it.
Right. And then so they go to things.
Instagram will go the same way.
It is already, I think. And I think there's also like, everyone was like, the kids are using TikTok. I don't understand it. That was like 5 months ago. Now I talk to older or artists of my vintage who are older. I don't know why I backtracked on saying older. I'm old. They are saying, yeah, now I'm trying to use TikTok. And you can hear it. You can hear it being like, the subtext is the young people are using this thing, so now I'm trying it. And then 5 months from now, all the youngs are going to abandon TikTok because all the olds came in. So I think it's just sort of, it's not simply promotion. I actually think, like, what are people using? Like, what are you using, artist guest of mine? Like, what do you, if anything, and why do you choose to use it? So that's why I ask all this to say.
I also like TikTok. I don't really know how, I don't really want to use it. Like, I don't really want to perform for my phone at home, I guess. But Instagram works really well as like, as a visual artist, as well as like, I like to post my paintings and let people know what I'm working on. And it's, so when it does die, which it eventually will, if something doesn't replace it that's essentially the same, then I'll probably just stop using it.
And I think that's maybe
like, you know, social media.
I think we're all kind of,
because I don't really use social media to be social with anyone.
No, it is all of it is some form of self-promotion, whether you're sharing a thought, even if you're like, there's a thunderstorm coming, you want people to know that you know it. And so it's all a kind of like, here's a thing I know or think. And so it gets into this. Yeah, it's inherently unhealthy and narcissistic on many levels. And we've known it the whole time. It's like climate change. We know it's bad. We just don't do much about it to fight it. That's all.
We should ask Sandro, who got kicked off of all social media, how he feels. Is he feeling any better without it? or does he miss it?
It's because I was posting about thunderstorms that I knew were happening, and then I posted after they happened. I was like, see, I told you guys there was going to be a thunderstorm. And that's what they didn't like.
No one likes an annoying Nostradamus. Yeah, that's true. Right? No one likes it.
Sandra is a bit of a reverse Nostradamus.
Yeah,
in
reverse Nostradamus.
What has already happened.
Did you guys hear they landed a man on the moon? And you're like, Sandra, yeah, we all are aware of this situation. All right, I want to go to a song, if possible, from further up island so people can hear something. I'm going to, ideally, because there's two of you, we'll have consensus. Mm. I'm first, actually, Andre, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to go to Sandro. I've just made the arbitrary decision to ask Sandro to make a choice if he remembers the song names.
Oh, man.
And do you actually, let me say that, first of all. I don't want to put you on the spot. Do you remember any songs?
I do. I'm pretty sure I remember some names. I mean, I love all the songs on that record, but because it's the most recent one, the letting go of the record is the most freshest activity in my mind with the records.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, because you know, when you're done with a record, you're really done, and you kind of put it aside, and it you know, it gets banished in a way, you know, in a kind way.
Yeah. But you have to sort of reject it for a few months so that you can start working on other things.
Totally.
Yes, of course.
So,
of course.
But I'm going to call up the titles and I'm going to look at them.
Okay.
And so you're asking me what my favorite is, or which
no,
one
no,
I think you should play?
I've chosen to go to you, and Andre can object to this wholeheartedly, but I've chosen to go to you to choose a song that we can play for people. It can be, obviously, you know, I usually say pick a song if you can, and tell us why you chose it. So by default, your choice will tell us something about your relationship with that song. But if you want to explain why you chose it, that would be great. And then Andre, if you want to say anything more about it or dispute the choice, because it's a poor choice that Sandro has made among many in his life, then you can do that. So let's begin. Sandro, what song are you thinking about right now?
Well, all right. I love them all. They're all like pretty special. The Moon is Round and Empty. I think that's a cool song to play because it's so weird on a record of weird songs. It's one of the weirdest ones and has a really mysterious kind of atmosphere to it and has some great lines.
Okay.
In it. And it's
cool.
And it's kind of short. Well, it's not the shortest, but it's kind of short.
No, it's long.
And it's kind of long actually. And it also pushes the listener's patience in a way because it's kind of like it sits there and it, you know, you just kind of have to sit with it. Hmm. It's cool. I like it. I like it a lot.
It's like the
I like that song.
Are you good with that?
It's one of my favorites on Well, it's one of my favorites on the record. Mm-hmm. I would say it's maybe not a song that represents the record the best, or it is. I don't know.
It doesn't.
Pretty,
you're right. It's the outlier in a way. Like
within the context of the record makes it kind of cool.
It's the bone machine of the record, basically, is what you're saying, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So let me just flip this. I don't mean to cause confusion, but Andre, if you were to pick a song, what would you pick? I'm just curious. Because then we can we can make a decision based on this, if that's okay with you, Sandra.
Now, someone was to ask me, like, what's your favorite song on the record, I might say The Moon is Round and Empty, or maybe even the instrumental Flies.
Oh.
But what I would choose for the people would be something like like Wild Blueberries or Nature Compels Me. Maybe Wild Blueberries. It's like the happiest little song that makes you happy.
Well, Nature Compels Me. Nature Compels Me gets in my head all the time.
Yeah.
As well. So that's just something I'll say as well. Okay. So now a bunch of us have floated some songs. We have to make a decision. We're only going to play one, or else we'll play all of the ones that mentioned simultaneously so no one can make out anything.
Do you want to just surprise us, Vish?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I'm not going to throw to anything. I will pick one of the songs that was just alluded to. Either way, it is from the beautiful new album, Further Up Island, by Andre Etier, made in collaboration with Sandro Perry. And we'll go to something from it now, and I will identify it at the end in my outro of this particular episode. This got very meta And I apologize to anyone who feels like they're too inside our heads right now. But that's what's going to happen. Andre,
Sandro, I'm always inside my head.
Welcome. You're always inside your head. Andre, Sandro, I just want to say that I love you both very dearly. I thank you for this time on my show. I hope you enjoyed yourselves, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Love you too, Vish. Thanks for having us.
Love you.
Always great.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So, yes, from the album Further Up Island by Andre Etche with a huge assist from Sandro Perry, his collaborative record, the song you heard there, Nature Compels Me. That's what I chose. Nature Compels Me. I hope you enjoyed that. And thanks again to Andre and Sandro for appearing on this, the 641st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available absolutely wherever it is you get your podcasts. Now, if you can't find an episode you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. $6 or more a month grants you access to exclusive content, and if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, please message me on Patreon and I will get you one while supplies last. As I'm speaking to you, I'm staring at a package I have here that is due to go out to Chagrin Falls, Ohio. That's not even a joke for you Tragically Hip fans. Tragically Hip were mentioned in this show, and they have a song called Chagrin Falls. What do you know? I asked the fella, have you heard of this song? The guy who asked for the shirt, and he says, oh yeah, I know that song. So there you go. Anyway, enough about that. Patreon.com/creativecontrol to support the show and potentially get a t-shirt wherever you live, whether the Tragically Hip named a song after you or not. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about at blackbird.ca. Also, to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on the program. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode with Sandro and Andre, or Andre and Sandro, depending on your preference. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you'll consider subscribing to this podcast and maybe telling your friends about this episode, or maybe the show as a whole if you know about it and you feel like it's worth talking about. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Thank you for being you and for being nice, kind to each other, and I hope we speak again soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.